The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
It is our duty to safeguard the legacy, the idea, the momentous achievement of those barons.
That was British Prime Minister David Cameron speaking yesterday at the celebration at Runnymede, saying it was our duty to safeguard that legacy started by those barons 800 years ago. We talked at length about this on yesterday's program, and it was celebrated. That history, it was celebrated here in the UK. The Queen was also in attendance yesterday at the Big Bash. They had a whole host of jurists and scholars, a group of 500 American lawyers that came over from the States. But not everyone was in the mood to celebrate. If you read yesterday's New York Times, you saw that. Stop revering the Magna Carta. That's what it said in one of the opinion pieces, saying that the fame of the document rested on several myths, the way this scholar viewed it, a professor from the University of Chicago. Another piece, also in the New York Times, Magna Carta still posing a challenge at 800. Still posing some challenges, this piece says, amid all the celebrating, the years of planning, of conferences, exhibits, speeches, papers, symposia, ecumenia, extolling Magna Carta. It might seem churlish to take another view, but there are some legal scholars who believe the charter is actually not such a big deal. Our adulation of it, they say, comes from what we believe it to have been in hindsight, not what it was at the time. And so that's the other view, the more churlish view, as he says there. And really, if it has to do with law and order, if it has to do with the rule of law, then you can always expect critics to show up in full force. I'd like to begin the program today. You're listening, by the way, to the Trumpet Daily radio show on KPCG 101.3. in Edmond, Oklahoma, kpcg.fm, for the online stream. I'd like to start today's program by continuing on with just a little bit more on this subject of the rule of law, and I'm going to draw your attention to a speech given by another scholar. This is from Neil Ferguson, a speech that he gave at Stanford 3 years ago. Of course, he's the distinguished author and teacher that serves there at Harvard. And he gave this speech at Stanford in 2012. And he talked at length about the decline of American and British institutions. Notice what he said.
I want to argue that we are in the midst of a grave deterioration in the quality of Western institutions. The institutions that used to be the best in the world are no longer.
Now, he's not alone in sounding this alarm. Many have acknowledged this. Some are applauding it. But we are witnessing a grave deterioration in the quality of Western institutions. Who can deny that? When I reviewed Ferguson's speech this morning when prepping for the program, it made me think of the clip that we played for you last week from Winston Churchill in 1940. Right before the Battle of Britain began, when he said, "Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization." He said, "Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions." The continuity of our institutions, our Western institutions, our British and American institutions. those long-held, firmly established institutions, they came under attack in World War II. And like we pointed out last week, I mean, it was the last minute when Britain finally awakened, when Britain finally stepped forward in the face of that German aggression. But isn't what's happening today worse in so many ways? Because the degeneration is setting in, and we're not even being attacked from an outside enemy. Not yet, anyway. Today, those institutions are just simply deteriorating. They're degenerating before us. We are in the midst, as he said, in the midst of a grave deterioration in the quality of those Western institutions. You look at the United States. You hear so much over here in the papers about Greece and the debt level problems that it has. It can't repay its debts. America is already verging on Greek levels of debt. And you could say there's Greek levels of corruption in American politics as well. We're facing collapse. We very nearly got there in 2008. Looking at the economic crash. Our social systems are breaking down. Look at what's happened in Britain. Look at the course that America is on. Now the reason, going back to Mr. Ferguson's speech, the reason America and British institutions, the reason they used to be the best in the world, according to Ferguson, was largely because of the rule of law. He cited all kinds of statistics there in that speech he gave at Stanford, referring to the World Economic Forum. And Robert Morley wrote about this speech, by the way, back in 2012 at thetrumpet.com. But Ferguson refers to this World Economic Forum and how that they track all of these figures relating to each nation's competitiveness, whether they protect property rights, how much corruption is there in these individual governments, whether politicians are regarded as ethical, if the court system's independent, how much crime, how much violence is there. And according to the World Economic Forum, I mean, over the years, America's ranking just keeps plummeting. And to a point now where it's just shameful. You think America is supposed to be this champion for peace, for prosperity, for law and order, for the rule of law. Instead, America's standing is slipping. Of the top 15 categories related to rule of law, Neil Ferguson points out that Hong Kong now beats America in every measure, all 15. Taiwan beats America in 9 of those categories. Even China rates higher than America in 2 of the 15. Red China does. Notice this clip from Mr. Ferguson's speech.
The really surprising thing, though, is that Hong Kong beats the United States in 15 out of 15 measures of the quality of the rule of law. And even Taiwan is not bad. It wins 9 out of 15 contests with the United States. In fact, the PRC even manages to get 2 rankings above the US, which is really rather astonishing. What this table tells you is that something is rotten in the state of America. We think we have the rule of law. We actually have the rule of lawyers.
Something is indeed rotten in the state of America. We like to say we have that rule of law, as he notes there, but it's really just the rule of lawyers. So many of those leading politicians in Washington, D.C., our lawyers, so much of the legislation, as he brings out, it's incomprehensible. I've been reading to you in the last week and a half from what Paul Johnson wrote in that article back in 1999 about the rule of law and how that with the American experiment originally, that it was designed to establish the rule of God on earth. It was the rule of law, God's law, first and foremost, that really made America great. Now, we've talked before, just to give you the backstory, of course, and this is brought out in the United States and Britain in prophecy, that we've been the recipients of all these blessings from God, all of this fabulous wealth, this awesome power, because of the obedience of Abraham, our forefather. He obeyed God, and God has blessed his descendants because of that obedience. But as Mr. Armstrong brings out in the United States and Britain in prophecy, I mean, whether we hang on to those blessings or not depends upon our adherence to God's law. It depends on how well we uphold the rule of law. Notice how Niall Ferguson or Neil Ferguson talks about just the massive transformation that we're living through.
The great reconvergence is what we're living through. That is the story of our time. In 1977-78, the average American was 20 times richer than the average Chinese. Now it's 5 times. And falling. This is the great reconvergence of our time. And I want to suggest to you that it has deep roots. But I don't want to conclude in too apocalyptic a way. It's not as if we should kowtow right now to the new Asian state capitalist model. That's not the argument that I want to make. The argument I want to make is that we need to reform, reboot, and update our institutions. We need to recognize the degree to which they have degenerated.
Now, he made those comments in 2012, and look at where we are today, just 2 or 3 years later. And really, have there been any positive reforms? Have we rebooted? I mean, you can at least applaud his efforts to call for reform, to call for change. He said that in 2012. Notice what Senator Tom Coburn wrote in 2013. This was at the end of the year in a Wall Street Journal piece titled "The Year Washington Fled Reality." And Mr. Coburn says the past year may go down not only as the least productive ever in Washington, but as one of the worst for the Republic. He's talking about 2013. In both the executive branch and Congress, Americans witnessed an unwinding of the country's founding principles and of their government's most basic responsibilities. He said the rule of law gave way to the rule of rulers. See, the rule of law gave way to the rulers, to the lawyers. He's basically pointing out that America's rotting from within. And you look at what's happening abroad, the full-scale retreat, and how that we've entered into a post-American world. That's really what Neil Ferguson is warning about as well. One final clip from Mr. Ferguson's speech talking about just how dramatic a decline can be. Notice.
The argument, which is really in the book Civilization, and you probably saw in a foreign affairs essay that I did before the book, is that historical change happens much faster than you think. You shouldn't imagine that history is cyclical or seasonal. You shouldn't have in your head a model of great powers or economies or corporations rising gradually, reaching their zenith, and then gradually declining and aging. That's what we do as individuals. I'm about there in the curve, unfortunately. But it's not what the organizations that we build do. Because the organizations that we build, whether they're political or economic organizations, are in fact complex systems in the strict sense of the term. And what tends to be true of complex systems is that they exist on the edge of chaos. And a really quite small perturbation can cause the apparent equilibrium, it's only apparent, to break down. This is an insight which comes from natural sciences, but from a historian's point of view makes immediate intuitive sense. The great downfalls of history are not gradual. Even the decline and fall of the Roman Empire happened faster than you think. It was all pretty much in three decades in the early 5th century AD. That was what killed the Western Roman Empire. You mentioned, Steve, the collapse of the Soviet Union, which should have taught us how quickly an apparently stable system can implode. But we've had even more recent experience of this. Wasn't the financial crisis a classic example of a complex system suddenly going critical? So I think, going back to the projections and Gary Becker's question, you know, the truth is that these projections don't really tell us anything about the future. What they tell us is that at some point, the unsustainable limit will be reached. At some point, the complex system will go into a paroxysm. It will go over the edge. And we need to avoid that happening.
Dramatic change can happen in a hurry. Look at how different the world is today than it was even 5 or 10 years ago. Have we learned the lesson from history? Have we learned the lesson from the Roman Empire? Or even more recently, to use those examples that Ferguson noted, the Soviet Union's collapse? Or even the economic crash of 2008? Yesterday I read to you again that piece from Paul Johnson about the rule of law and how that it has to be the same law for everyone, everywhere, kings, emperors, high priests, and so on. And that if you make exceptions, then the rule of law begins to collapse. And that's been the grand lesson of antiquity. That's been the grand lesson of history. And look, that collapse, it happens much faster than we think. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG, 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream's available at kpcg.fm. Send us your feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. The Trumpet Daily.
I'm not some odious Brit who's gloating at the decline of the United States. No, I came here to get away from decline.
That was Neil Ferguson joking there at that Stanford speech a few years ago about the decline of Britain and the United States. I mean, he doesn't want to see it happen, but we've all seen it happen with respect to the empire. And look at the course America is now on, following Britain's lead. This article from The Telegraph just the other day, Defense Chiefs, UK feeble on world stage. That's the title at The Telegraph. The subhead says top military leaders warn Britain's military presence has been rendered feeble against world threats. Britain's response now, all too often, is a feeble one at best. Four former leaders of the armed forces issue a passionate warning about the decline of British influence, saying they're deeply concerned by the UK's failure to act as crises grow in Iraq, Syria, and Russia. Failure to act. It goes on and lists these four military men. One of them, Sir Nigel Essenhi, writing in The Telegraph, a former First Sea Lord, says there are disquieting parallels between Britain's unwillingness to arm itself now and in the 1930s, when it failed to prepare to combat the growing threat from Hitler until it was nearly too late. We talked about this last week in the Battle of Britain. They almost waited until it was too late. This article says the former commanders warn that cuts to the forces in the past 5 years have already seriously undermined Britain's military alliance with America. Britain's now facing the real risk of being drawn into a conflict with an increasingly aggressive Russia in Eastern Europe, but there are serious questions over whether the UK would be able to respond, the former commanders say. Britain in the 1920s and 1930s was still too horrified by the First World War and all but bankrupt as a result of it to face up to the growing menace that Nazism presented to European stability, he says. So he's drawing some parallels between today and those years leading up to World War II. I'll give you some, just a few facts and figures on the U.S. military drawdown as well. But first, let me just refer you to another story. This is actually featured at the top of the page at thetrumpet.com today about Iran's tightening stranglehold of Afghanistan. Anthony Chibariwe writes here that one easy way to determine where Iran wields strong regional influence is to identify the highly unstable nations of the Middle East, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Libya, Sudan, and as a recent report verifies, Afghanistan. In other words, just look for the areas of instability in the region, and you're bound to find Iran lurking somewhere behind the scenes. And oh, by the way, you're also bound to find America absent. His article goes on and says, he writes, on June 11th, the Wall Street Journal reported on Iran's support for the Taliban. I'll read from that in just a second, that June 11 piece. That's actually not news, Chibariwe says. Tehran's documented backing of the Taliban goes as far back as 2007, despite the prior tension that existed between the Shiite Iranians and the Sunni Taliban, and Iran's prior support of NATO's attack on the Taliban beginning in 2001. And he's referring to this Wall Street Journal piece from the other day, and how it just puts America in such an awkward and difficult position. Because we need Iran's help in Iraq and Syria to push back ISIS. And here they are fighting against us in Afghanistan. Going to that Wall Street Journal piece, the subhead, Shiite Tehran, has quietly boosted ties with the Sunni militant group and is now recruiting and training its fighters, training the Taliban, who are fighting against Americans in Afghanistan. The journal says Iran's alliance with the Taliban took a new turn in June 2013 when Tehran formally invited a Taliban delegation to participate in a conference on Islam and to meet senior Iranian officials. Iran formalized its alliance with the Taliban by allowing the group to open an office in Mashhad, maintaining a presence there since at least the beginning of 2014, a foreign official said. And then in the journal piece, it says, Iran's strategy in backing the Taliban is twofold, officials say. Countering U.S. influence, well, it's always that, countering U.S. influence in the region, and providing a counterweight to Islamic State's move into the Taliban's territory in Afghanistan. So the purposes, they're twofold. And one of them is always going to be to counter U.S. influence. As the U.S. leaves, Iran fills the vacuum. And, of course, the U.S. is in the midst of a huge drawdown, hoping to have about 1,000 troops left there by the end of 2016. That's what President Obama is aiming for, to bring it. I mean, it was at its peak just a few years ago. In 2011, it had 100,000 troops there. The United States had 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. And going back to what Neil Ferguson said at Stanford, I mean, we are witnessing the grave deterioration of these great institutions, including the military. Boy, what a shocking development this is. This journal piece says Representative Ed Royce, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said Iran's support to the Taliban could increase if a nuclear deal is signed and Iran wins sanction relief. They're about to be flooded with money because of the United States negotiators. Across the region, Iran is stepping up its support for militants and rebel groups, Mr. Royce said. With billions in sanctions relief coming, that support goes into overdrive. Yes, they will use that sanctions relief to support their proxies all over the region. In Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Yemen, with Hezbollah, Assad's regime in Syria. And on and on and on it goes. They're hedging their bets, as another columnist points out. They can see the direction that Afghanistan is headed in. They can see that the U.S. drawdown is going to lead to practically nothing there left from the United States invasion in just a little over a year. And so just like it was when America left Iraq, you see Iran now positioning itself in Afghanistan to fill that power void. Let's go through Deuteronomy 28, just a few of the high spots here in this important passage, because it really does tie in with so many of these things that we're talking about here. Of course, it's fascinating to read some of these articles and exciting to know that we're drawing near to the end of this age, clearly. And yet it's also very sad in some ways to see these commentators, some of them very, you know, smart individuals, but that have no idea where this ultimately is leading. Thankfully, we can look forward to the return of Jesus Christ to fix everything that man breaks. But we're going to see a lot of our institutions break down right before our eyes. Deuteronomy 28, and verse 1, it says, "And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord your God, to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord your God will set you on high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come on you and overtake you, if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God." We've talked so much in recent days about the rule of law. That's what God's saying here to his people Israel. Look, if you obey the rule of law, then you're going to be blessed. You're going to be overtaken by blessings. You'll be blessed in the city. You'll be blessed in the field. Your children will be blessed. Your produce, your flocks, all of your goods, the weather around you will be blessed. Your work, you'll be blessed at work. Your finances will be blessed. When you come home, when you go out, when you fight against your enemies, I'll bless you in all these endeavors, and you'll rise above all nations. That's what these commentators, of course, miss. They miss God's hand, not just in the decline of these great U.S. and British institutions, but they don't see God's hand in the establishment of those great institutions. They don't see God's hand fulfilling His promises made to Abraham, and how that our nations have been the recipients of these great blessings from God. Last week in that Battle of Britain episode, remember we talked about what the king did during that crisis, calling for a day of prayer, calling on the nation to cry out to God for help, for deliverance. It wasn't that long ago when our people did that routinely. Not anymore. Verse 7 says, "The Lord shall cause your enemies that rise up against you to be smitten before your face. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways." What a blessing it is when God fights your battles. Verse 9, "The Lord shall establish you and holy people unto Himself, as He has sworn unto you, if you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in His ways, and all the people of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you." What an example. What an example. There was a time, just look back, not even that long ago in our history, when this was the case, when nations around the world feared the English-speaking peoples. They feared the British Navy. They complied with the rule of law administered in those colonies. They feared the American superpower. And now you have Iran just waltzing right into Afghanistan and not even worried about what the United States will do. Not even concerned. Are we witnessing grave degeneration in our many Western institutions? We've moved into a post-American world, certainly the post-British Empire world. Verse 13 says, "And the Lord shall make you the head and not the tail, and you shall be above only, and you shall not be beneath, if that you hearken unto the commandments of the Lord your God." See, the rule of law, which I command you this day to observe and to do them. See, you Israelites, you'll lead other nations. You'll be the head so long as you obey your God. Then after listing all of these wonderful blessings of abundance and prosperity and strength and power, God tells us, God prophesies what happens when we reject His laws. Verse 15, "But it shall come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God, to observe to do all His commandments and His statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you." See, the same thing. Being overtaken by blessings, or in this case, by curses. Why not choose life and blessings? Why not choose obedience, given what God's spelling out here? Verse 20, again, just hitting some of the high spots. "The Lord shall send upon you cursing, vexation, and rebuke in all that you set your hand for to do, until you be destroyed and until you perish quickly." See, it does happen quickly. These great transformations in history, these great collapses of these powerful institutions, it can all come crashing down so fast. That's what Neil Ferguson was saying there at the end of his speech at Stanford. The handwriting is on the wall, as it says in Daniel 5. Look at how quickly it collapsed. In Babylon. Look at how quickly it collapsed. The Roman Empire that was around for centuries. And in just a 2 or 3 decade span, gone. Look at the Soviet Union. Look at how quickly that collapse happened. And it seems like they've just about as quickly reemerged. Verse 21, the Lord shall make the pestilence cleave unto you until he have consumed you from off the land where you go to possess it. Verse 22, the Lord shall smite you with a consumption and with fever, with inflammation, all these diseases, these sicknesses. It says in verse 23, and your heaven that is over your head shall be brass, and the earth that is under you shall be iron. I mean, it's not fashionable today to talk about a God who controls the weather as if God can't. As if God can't intervene. And you can understand why people wouldn't want to go there. Because they'd have to say, well, if God didn't prevent that disaster from happening, then, well, how could he not prevent it if he could? Why would he cause all that suffering? God's not the cause. Mankind is experiencing what it's like to live in a world that's guided by the prince of the power of the air, as it says in Ephesians 2. The god of this world, who is Satan the devil, 2 Corinthians 4:4. We're experiencing here at the last few years of man's age, we're experiencing what it's like to live cut off from God, to live apart from God. Verse 25, the Lord shall cause you to be smitten before your enemies, and you shall go out one way against them and flee 7 ways. See, just the opposite of what he said in the blessing section. I mean, when is the last military campaign for the United States? When is the last campaign that actually ended well, that actually was a great success? You'd have to go back to World War II. Look at all of the battles and the skirmishes and the wars, everything that's happened since that time. Has there been one that's turned out good for the United States? What about for Britain? This is from the American Thinker a couple of years ago, December 12, 2013. The decline and fall of American deterrence, talking about the military, the great U.S. military. Once all the military budget cuts are in place, the United States will have the fewest naval vessels at sea since before World War I, the smallest Air Force ever, and an Army and Marine Corps with severely diminished capacity. The nation will have only 300 or so nuclear weapons. The hollow military, which we heard so much about during the Carter years, will be back. See, the United States is on the same path that Britain has been on for decades. Once all these cuts are in place, and meanwhile, look at Russia, look at China, look at Iran, look at all these nations pushing to build up their militaries, to build up their air force, to build up the army. Verse 29, and you shall grope at noonday and as the blind gropes in darkness, and you shall not prosper in your ways. And you shall be only oppressed and spoiled evermore, and no man, it says, shall save you. And then verse 37, and you shall become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations, whither the Lord shall lead you. See, instead of being that positive example, that force for good, you're just going to be an embarrassment. Other nations will look at you and mock you. They'll make fun of you. Verse 43, the stranger that's within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. See, the tables will turn. Everything will be upside down. And of course, as I say, a lot of people applaud this. They want to see America replaced with another superpower or two or three. And that's happening. And they're about to see what it's like to live in a post-American world. Verse 44, he shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. I mean, how much longer? We talk about Greece here in the European region. But how much longer can the world's biggest debtor nation, by far, the United States of America, how much longer can it project any kind of power or influence over the world? Do you see the signs of the times that we're in? Already, the kings of the East are pushing to develop another reserve currency. What happens when the dollar is no longer the reserve currency? America always has that to fall back on. I mean, there was a time when the Brits, of course, thought, well, there's no way that the almighty pound will ever collapse. History says we're not going to make it. That's what Tom Coburn said back in a speech in 2010, talking about the coming debt bomb. History says we're not going to make it. And really, if you listen to the entire speech by Neil Ferguson there, you have to read between the lines a little bit, but that's the same kind of message you're hearing. If you look at history, it teaches us that it's not going to survive. Moreover, verse 45, all these curses shall come upon you and shall pursue you and overtake you till you be destroyed, because you hearken not unto the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments, it says, and his statutes, which he commanded you. See, you do away with the rule of law. You make compromises. You make exceptions. And what happens? Let's just finish over in Deuteronomy 30. Finish on a little bit more of a positive note here. Study the entire chapter, though, that we just went through there. The whole book, in fact, would be a great study, the book of Deuteronomy. But you can read through all of those blessings and cursings in Deuteronomy 28. And then look at chapter 30 here. And verse 11, it says, for this commandment, which I command you this day, it is not hidden from you, neither is it far off. It's not in heaven that you should say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea, that you should say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it. It says, but the word is very near to you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may do it. God's truth isn't far off, Moses wrote here. It's not far away from you. It's right close to you. It can be in your mouth even, in your heart. If you're living it, if you're studying it, if you're doing it, his law, God's law, his truth, God's rule of law is plain and clear for all of us to see. Verse 16, in that I command you this day to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and the Lord your God shall bless you in the land where you go to possess it. This was the huge lesson that Moses wanted to pass along to the young people, to the oncoming generation. You sit up and take note of history and these grand lessons of antiquity. And if you veer off course, you get it back on track by going back to the law, by going back to the original source, the original document, the rule of law. Otherwise, everything's going to deteriorate and degenerate. Verse 19, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, Moses said, and that both you and your seed may live, that your family might be blessed, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice, and that you may cleave unto him, for he is your life and the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. I mean, this is the theme of the whole book of Deuteronomy. Choose. Choose to come underneath the rule of law. Make that choice. Choose life. Choose blessings. Isn't it about time that we wake up to what's happening in this world? To what's happening in the United States? To what has happened in Britain? And now to what's happening all around us as we see these other emerging power blocks coming out of the Middle East, coming out of Asia, coming out of Europe. God earnestly desires that we choose to live, that we choose a life of righteousness, that we choose blessings and prosperity. But in making that choice, we have to choose to come underneath the rule of law. God's laws, God's government, God's truth. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG, 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. And the live stream is available at kpcg.fm. We thank you for listening to us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.